Hello and welcome, everyone. I am Jake Wurzak, and this is Masters of Moments. This podcast features conversations with the top entrepreneurs and business leaders around hospitality, real estate, investing, and company building. Thank you so much for joining me and enjoy the show. You've heard it on the podcast so many times, and I'm going to say it again. Relationships are everything in real estate. At Dove Hill Capital Management, one of the most interesting things about our track record is that the majority of the deals have come to us off market or lightly marketed. So we had this innovative idea a few years ago, and that was to launch the Deal Rewards Program at Dove Hill Capital Management. If you want to learn more, you can go to www.dovehillcos.com. Again, that's www.dovehillcos.com. You click on the little deal rewards icon and you can sign up. And if you have a deal that's off market that somehow came to you, maybe you're working on a deal, you're trying to put it together, bring it to us because we can help you get that deal done through our deal rewards program. We offer industry-leading incentives. We'll allow you to co-invest in the deal. We could come up with another interesting structure to allow you to do the deal with us. The deal rewards program is incredibly unique and will give you an opportunity to do a deal with Dove Hill, either in a completely passive position, or maybe you're taking a more active role. Either way, please check out the deal rewards program at www.dovehillcos.com. Appreciate it. And this is how we've been getting our flow. The team at Wurzak Hotel Group is just firing on all cylinders right now. So I am very, very excited and proud to announce that we now have a third-party management program where we are managing hotels for other owners. We used to just manage hotels for ourselves, and now we've made some tremendous forward investments in people, our team, technology, accounting, finance, and most importantly, culture. And we are prepared to bring that out to everyone. Our team is experienced in managing independent hotels, branded hotels. We have focused heavily on boutique, lifestyle, and experiential hotels, and we're ready to manage a hotel for you. So if you are interested, if you want to learn more about what we do and how we can help your hotel, please visit wurzakhotels.com.
All right, let's do this. Good morning, everyone. If you're on the West Coast, it's a little early. If we haven't met before, my name's Jake Wurzak. Can do a real short intro. But if you want to keep in touch with anything that I'm doing, I've got this little website, jakewurzak.com, and it'll link you to my business, my podcast. I started doing some coaching stuff with a few people, which has been actually a lot of fun. And I've really enjoyed it, and I know they have as well. But I have bought and sold and owned and managed over $1.5 billion worth of hospitality assets. We currently manage 11 hotels, almost 3,000 rooms. We have close to 1,000 employees, and we operate in six different states right now. So that is a little bit of background on me. Our investment platform is called Dove Hill, and our hotel management company is called Wurzak Hotel Group. So I thought we'd do a little Q&A today, and that's always fun. I know a lot of people are getting to the end of the year trying to figure out what to do. The investment climate right now is a little strange, disconnected. So happy to share what we're seeing on the operation side, on the investment side, anything. I am generally an open book. If you feel like you want to do more of this, I do some one-on-one coaching. So if you go to my website, you can click right here, book it, and just book it right there. It's really expensive because I only want to do it with people that are very serious. But if it's something that you think you want to do, we will go one-on-one for as long as you want. So keep that in mind if that's something you are open to. So before I do the Q&As, I always like to start with kind of some stuff that I'm thinking about that I'm inspired by. So recently, I went to a place called, trying to click to where I want to go, to Blackberry Farm. And Blackberry Farm is arguably the best hotel in the country. And the performance is astronomical. They actually opened another hotel, a sister hotel called Blackberry Mountain, which is about 30 minutes away from Blackberry Farm. Blackberry Farm is in Wallen, Tennessee, which is kind of the Smoky Mountain area of Tennessee. If you want to go there, you can fly into Knoxville, and it's about 20 or 30 minutes away. The rates they're getting obviously vary throughout the year, but they're somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 to $3,000 a night just for two people. It is an all-inclusive hotel, so all of your meals are included, except like high-end wine. But what's not included is the activities. There are a few basic activities that are included, but then everything else is a la carte on top of that. It's a part of Relais and Chateau, and it's been opened as a hotel since like 2000, but it's really come on the map probably in the past 8 to 10 years as a landmark hotel. It's owned by a family that's the Beale family. They're actually the founders of Ruby Tuesday restaurants. So I always think it's amazing when a kind of low-end, kind of generic restaurant food and beverage company comes out, has a blowout business in that space, and then does a passion project, which probably started as a complete money drain and then now has turned into a really profitable business post-COVID. But like before COVID, they weren't really making much money. And it has evolved a little bit. It's worth going into kind of the whole story and how it came about. But, you know, they bought the property in 1976 and people didn't really start talking about it until the 2000s. And they had a son named Sam, and Sam had a real passion for food and culinary. I think he spent some time at the French Laundry, and he thought the way to differentiate this hotel, take it to the next level, would be to bring in all of the culinary experience that he learned in Napa and on the West Coast, French Laundry, into Blackberry Farm. And that really is what set it apart, because they joined the Relais and Chateau program, which those hotels are known for incredibly high quality food, you know, like Michelin, very European level style of food and service. And that took it up to this astronomical, historic hotel that people talk about. People wait years to get in. Believe it or not, we booked the hotel 3 days before going, and I guess got lucky being able to get accommodated. But it was really tremendous. Not only did I avoid going to this hotel for probably about 5 or 6 years because I thought it was probably going to be more hype than actual quality and value that I was getting, but it met all of my expectations. Unfortunately, Sam, the son, died in a skiing accident. He was a very young guy. And his wife actually took over the entire property with the family as kind of the visionary. And then they opened Blackberry Mountain, I think like in 2019, 2020. And that turned out to be a huge success as well. And another interesting thing that they do is they sell real estate, and they really sell a whole Blackberry lifestyle. So, you know, if you go, you can basically become Blackberry Farm. You can buy a house. They will decorate the whole house. They will service the house just like a hotel, whether you put it in the hotel program or not. They even sell Blackberry dogs, which are kind of funny. Like, you can have a Blackberry dog. It's basically a breed of truffle dogs. And the real estate, but for Blackberry Farm, probably wouldn't be worth, you know, 25 or 30% of what it is. But because of the whole cachet, what they were able to create, the standards that they brought into this pretty humble area in Tennessee is quite amazing. And then they also do all their own designs. So they have like their whole interior design team that does homes. Now they've done some commercial properties, obviously, for their own hotels. Let me show you a little bit of kind of what it looks like. So this is the design. They're basically set around all these little cottages, and some of them are kind of more farm style with big views of like Meadows and things like that. And others are more oriented towards the woods. And they have this amazing big red barn where all of their culinary is. But the food is really outstanding. The decor is perfectly, I actually stayed in this. This is the one that we stayed in right there. It was awesome. And the other neat thing that they do is they have a variety of different accommodations. So if you want to bring a whole family, whether it's an extended family or just immediate family, they have all of these opportunities to do it. It's incredibly expensive. You know, the houses go for $7,000 to $12,000 a night, and they're extraordinary, but they are very expensive. Keep in mind, it does include food, complimentary snacks, non-alcoholic beverages. You get a golf cart, but it is a lot. But you get what you pay for, and it is really outstanding. One of the reasons why I think it's so outstanding is because of the experiences and their wine and food program. So if I go here, this is the experiences section. So they have so many activities from horseback riding, shooting, fishing, like hiking, all this stuff. And it's really tremendous. And because they have all of these experiences, which are also kid experiences, so you can bring your whole family, you create raving fans and people that want to constantly come back. My personal opinion is that most people are not that creative. If you stick them in a cabin in the woods, maybe they'll walk around, but they're not going to like generate their own activities. So I think it's really important to create activities if you want to have repeat guests. The other major differentiator is their food and wine program. And it's outstanding. They have multiple restaurants and everything is included. So you get tremendous value. But one of the highlights of the trip is they have this big red barn they imported from Amish country. And it's the wood is inside is amazing. And it's like the equivalent of a Michelin star restaurant. I'm trying to go through, like, just look at their website and how much time they spend like explaining all this stuff and the design and the detail. It's just extraordinary. And here's the barn. And this is just a big, big, big differentiator that very few hotels in the country can compete with. This is their other restaurant called the Dogwood. It's kind of their three-meal restaurant, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. A little bit more casual, but the service level is outstanding. And one of the most interesting things I think that you'll find if you visit Blackberry Farm or Blackberry Mountain is that they're hiring mostly from the local community. So they're not importing all of these like European hospitality trained professionals. They are teaching people with a good natured soul, natural hospitality centric folks in the local community. People are even traveling to work here to be in hospitality. So they don't necessarily have a hospitality background. So that's really important for you and everyone, me too, to think about, because you can create a hotel wherever you are as long as there's good people and you have a quality training program to take those people to the next level, to bring in the service program that a hotel like this needs. And that's what you need to do in order to consistently bring people back year after year, and in some cases, multiple times a year, and also to sell them real estate. Like, could you imagine buying real estate in a place where there's like nowhere to eat? If you spend $5 million on a house or $3 million on a house, and then you're like driving to like McDonald's or something to eat, that doesn't make any sense. So the whole package and the experience and the food and beverage that they've created sustains not only their hotel guests, but also the real estate, also the mystique. The other important thing that they can do here, is they can accommodate groups. So if you are a big company, if you're like a professional organization, or maybe, I don't know, you're like Pirelli Tires or something, and you want to reward all of your top salespeople, you can bring them to this hotel and it is a world-class experience. And they know how to cater to groups, weddings, they can be set up for meetings, all this kind of stuff. It's really important because what that allows them to attract is diversity of demand. And diversity of demand is important because the slow season, I would say, in this hotel is probably like right after Christmas. Great to be there for Christmas because it, you know, looks like out of a magazine. But maybe January and February because it's cold, a lot of the leaves are falling, the scenery looks different. Some of the activities might be limited or you might be cold during the activities, but that's when you can bring in groups. And if they didn't have the facilities for groups, they would be really lagging during those slow periods. And now they can take people who heard about Blackberry Farm from their friends in the summer that spent $3,000 or $4,000 a night, but you can go there as a group and get in at a slightly lower price point, but you're having group meetings and doing all this other experiential stuff, which is still really, really great and cool. I actually took a couple of videos of my room and I will share them. Let's see if I have it up here. So here's the room. We had kind of a bigger room, it was a suite, I guess. They called it a cottage. And the amenities in the room were awesome. Like they had a refrigerator with like ice cream sandwiches and stuff, fun stuff. They had, you know, drinks that you could buy in the room. They had some great little snacks. And then the bedroom was also pretty neat as well. Obviously in the same decor. I'll share that. Really awesome. So I mentioned a couple times, this hotel is part of Relais and Chateau. And Relais and Chateau, I think, is one of the best hotel collections out there. It's very European inspired and consists of a lot of the best inns and smaller hospitality spaces from restaurants to hotels. And if you ask me, the future of hospitality is either like large beachfront resorts or these smaller, more intimate, experiential, and food-driven places. So I think Relais and Chateau is an amazing place to search for inspiration and ideas. So if you go to like their website, here are some of the hotels I just took in North America, and I filtered out all the restaurants. So these are just hotels. Obviously there's Blackberry Farm, Bedford Post Inn, which Richard Gear owns. Here's Blackberry Mountain, which is their other hotel. It's really hard to get into Relais and Chateau. I think Blackberry Mountain was the only hotel that was a Relais and Chateau before they opened. So a lot of hotels, they want to see how you are before they will give you the Relais and Chateau designation. This is a cool one that I've never heard of, Cataluchi Ranch in North Carolina. A lot of these places that look like that are in the Mountain West. So if you are inspired by doing something like this and building an experiential hotel like this, Relais and Chateau is a great place to get inspiration and ideas. So I would encourage you to go there, be inspired, see what other people are doing, visit some of these hotels, because I definitely think the future of hospitality is here. Now, it's challenging to scale, but if you look at Belmond, which is an amazing hotel group that was bought by LVMH in Europe, you know, they created a collection of these hotels and now they have something that's just world class. So maybe one-off is replicable, but when you have a collection, it's very unique. So the economies of scale are challenging, but if you can continue to build these, they're very, very hard to replicate. They're very hard to do. It's hard to find the locations. And there's also opportunities to buy these because maybe they were owned by a family and the kids don't want to do it anymore. And you can take it over now. So I wanted to share Blackberry Farm because I think a lot of people that I see online or on Twitter that are talking about building these like cool little experiential hotels or micro resorts or lands, whatever you want to call it, they're missing a huge component. And what they're missing is the experiential side. And I think some people call it an experiential place, but if you don't have any experiences for them that are curated by your own hotel, like it's okay to maybe bring in outside people, but you're starting to lose the feel and the vibe that you're trying to create. If you don't have experiences, I think it's going to be hard to get people to come back year after year and multiple times per year because you become a place that someone saw on Instagram and they just want to check the box and said, wow, I slept in the bed. I saw the view. It's great, but I don't need to come back because my experience isn't going to be different. If you have experiences, each time someone comes back, it'll be a different experience. Even if they go horseback riding and shooting every time, it'll be slightly different. The other thing that I think is very, very important is food and wine. That is something that keeps people coming back. Now, you have to have a great food and wine program, But that is something that will get people coming back, because who wants to go to this amazing, magical place and then have to like cook their own food or go to a restaurant and leave the place? Maybe you want to do that one night or once in a while, but it's really important to have that. And if you can't have that for size or space or other reasons, then try and do it in a little way, or try and come up with an experience to match that. But I think it's very hard to create competitive barriers to entry if all you have is a pretty view and a nice design and like a easy DIY booking process and check-in process. So I would challenge everyone on the call, everyone thinking about, you know, doing hotels in a way that is different from how Hilton and Marriott do hotels, to consider how you can create experiences and incorporate food and beverage. Now, experiences in food and beverage are very, very expensive. So you have to really be thoughtful about it, because it can, you know, sink your whole hotel. As I mentioned, for a while, Blackberry Farm didn't make any money. You know, they were backed by this very wealthy family. They only started making money after COVID. But I don't think this is a temporary shift. I think this is a permanent shift. And there's a lot of opportunity to make money in the space if you do it right.
Hey, Jake. Great to meet you. My name is Mauricio. I have a question. I am a hotelier as well. I work for one of the big brands. And oftentimes I deal with independent owners that have a great idea for a boutique hotel, but they're having problems finding financing, right? And then when we talk with the banks, they want a big brand like mine to go behind this type of hotel. So what advice would you have to an independent developer with a creative mindset to go and actually try to find financing for one of these properties like Blackberry Farm?
This is a great question. It's been a dilemma for a very long time, because previously, for those that don't know what Mauricio is talking about, if you wanted to go out and build a Hilton or a, well, sorry, if you, well, I'll start there. If you want to go out and build a Hilton or a Marriott hotel, a bank is looking at that as like investing in a triple net McDonald's deal. Everyone knows what a McDonald's does. Their performance is very bankable. It's very historical. But if you came to a bank and said, I want to borrow money for Jim's hamburger shop, they wouldn't give you the same terms. They wouldn't look at it the same way. And that happens the same exact way in hospitality. So a lot of independent and boutique hoteliers weren't able to historically get debt that branded and franchised hotels were able to get, because the banks were concerned that the reservation system that the brands had were so powerful, and the only way to be successful as a hotel was to leverage that reservation system. Now with Airbnb and booking.com and OTAs and all this other stuff, I think a lot of that has gone away, and banks are much more comfortable to lend to a independent hotel. But there's a couple caveats there. If you are someone with no hotel experience, just a great idea, it's going to be hard, because hotels are real estate and they're an operating business and they're difficult to execute. One way to mitigate your lack of experience would be to bring in a third-party manager. So we do third-party management. We're approved for lifestyle hotels for Marriott and Hilton. And actually, we just opened up the Moxie Hotel in St. Pete. And in a way, we were brought into that deal to allow them to get financing. We invested in the deal and we think it's a great deal. But that kind of brought some legitimacy to the opportunity, because our partner didn't have much experience in hotels. They didn't have experience operating hotels. So we made everyone calm. Okay, there's someone that knows what they're doing here to get this thing built and operated and to be successful. Today, banks are largely not lending for hotels. For existing hotels, it's easy, but for construction loans, it's very difficult. So I think a lot of non-traditional lenders are going there and filling the gap. And those non-traditional lenders are more apt to lend against a boutique property or an independent property. But I think one of the key ways to be successful in that endeavor is to align yourself with someone that's experienced, but also the location really, really, really matters. So when you think of South Beach, there's tremendous amounts of independent hotels. There's actually maybe too many independent hotels. And some people would argue that you actually have an advantage being with a brand, because there's less branded hotels than independent hotels. So if you're going to do an independent hotel there, there's a proven track record that banks can look to on performance. If you're going to do an independent hotel in the middle of nowhere, banks will have trouble looking at track record. So you're going to have to point to other hotels in remote locations as your comp set to get them comfortable. Another way in those type of situations is to use a local bank. So if you're going to build a cute little hotel on the beach in Maine, you should talk to a local bank because they know their backyard. They know the demand better than a bank in, you know, Florida or Boston might. So that's another way that we found to counter objections to, you know, financing some of these deals.
I had a question on when we talk about operating agreements with restaurant partners. And so on this topic, working on an experiential hotel in Mexico, and we have the people who actually originally introduced us to the land and have become close friends are very talented restaurant operators and right across the street from us. I'm now looking at a way to partner with them because I know that they want to expand their footprint. They have the best F&B in town and it's exceeding even the demand for it is exceeding what they can handle. And so at their current location, I would love to just get a sense for your end, when you're having a third-party operator, how you typically have seen those agreements structured. I know that there is kind of like lease paybacks of your original investment, et cetera, a lot of things to think about, but just love to get a double click on how you would be thinking about this in my shoes.
Sure. This is a great question. We talked about it a little bit on another Q&A call that we did. And I think there's three common ways that hotels today are incorporating outside restaurateurs into their hotel. Simplest way is just a traditional lease where the restaurateur leases space inside your hotel and maybe the hotel gives them a bit of tenant improvement money, but the restaurateur puts in most of the money, takes the risk for the business, and maybe is affiliated with the hotel, maybe is not offering services, but that's the simplest way. Another way is just to do a third-party management agreement. Like we talked about third-party management for hotels. In that case, the hotel owner is taking all the risk. They're putting up all the money. They're designing the space with the input of the hotel operator. And then the operator is managing the space and maybe getting a fee off the top line revenue, a little bit off the bottom line to incentivize them to be profitable. But the owner is taking the balance of the profit or the loss. They're taking all the risk. The other category would be a consulting agreement where you consult with a group, but you as the hotel owner and operator are managing the restaurants, taking all the risk, doing everything. But you're fact-checking, you're getting inspired, you're getting information from the other group. I guess there's a fourth way. The fourth way would be kind of what I would recommend for you, which is somewhat of like a hybrid situation because you have a local restaurateur that's world-class, that's the best. The food in Mexico is amazing. And the restaurant business is really hard. It's not the same thing as the hotel business. It's like a different thing. Hotel people can do restaurants, but sometimes that's not the best thing. So what you're going to have to figure out is how to allocate risk and cost. And do you care about economic upside coming from the restaurant, or do you more so care about the tangential benefit that the restaurant will provide to your experiential hotel? Meaning now you have this great restaurant, people will pay more for my hotel rooms, people will come to the hotel to enjoy the restaurant. And it's an amazing amenity and amazing experience for my guests that maybe I don't have to pay for, I don't have to manage, I don't have to take a lot of the risk on, et cetera. So for you, just getting like right down to it, I think there's probably an interesting hybrid approach where I wouldn't involve the restaurateur in the whole hotel business, hotel ownership, but you're going to receive a lot of benefit having this great restaurant there. So maybe there's a cost sharing on the investment where you want him to put up some money or her so that they feel invested in the space, but maybe you'll also put up some money because you own the real estate at the end of the day and you want to kind of make sure it looks good. So whatever arrangement that is, maybe it's you put up 40%, they put up 60%, maybe it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. You should get a payback on that money. And I think you should get a return on that money. And I don't think it should be very rich because the reason you're doing it is to provide an amazing benefit and to get kind of these intangible upsides towards the hotel. So maybe like you get paid back first, plus like a 10 or a 15% return for your capital. And then once your capital and your return has been paid, then maybe like you're kind of out of it. And then he catches up and he gets to make his money back.
Yeah.
And then maybe once he's made his money back, then, you know, he makes the lion's share and you make like, I don't know, 10 or 20% of whatever the profit is, something like that. The, you know, the things that you have to be very closely aligned on is the design and decor, the service experience, because you want it to somewhat match what you're trying to do on the hotel, but you also want to make sure that the hours of operation fit with what you want for the hotel. Like a lot of restaurateurs don't want to do breakfast because, you know, maybe they don't make a lot of money, but you need breakfast for your hotel. So they kind of have to do it. That's like something they just have to suck it up and do. So you're going to want to make sure that all of that stuff is ironclad. The other thing that you should think about is like utilities. You want to have all the utility aligned. And then I also think you want to have a plan if you decide to sell the hotel, mm-hmm. what happens to them? Because they've made an investment in the space. They probably don't want to get kicked out. Maybe they don't know who the future buyer is going to be. Maybe they're good with them. Maybe they're not. But these are things that are worthy of consideration and conversation. But that's like kind of how I would think about doing something, you know, for you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, that something hybrid is kind of where I've been leaning because originally I was like, we must delegate this restaurant, right? I'm like, you know, doing a hotel, we're leaning heavy into a wellness concept. So I'm also working on a spa amenity within there. So I'm like, that's already two businesses within one. Do I also want to do the restaurant? But the reality is that the margins in Mexico are 50 to 30%. And so when I started looking at that and the model and the fact that this is a more seasonal market and it does help us stabilize in off season, it started feeling like I shouldn't be completely giving that away and just figuring out what the right hybrid approach is because they definitely bring a lot of value. Their restaurants all day, et cetera. So they like can do breakfast. They know how to do everything. Strong tracker, have sold restaurants Amazing. Before. So,
and then they can also do, you know, maybe group events. So if people want to get married there. Now you can have a full wedding at your hotel. And I also think, you know, you should think about that. You know, how are you going to handle groups and weddings so that it's a profitable venture for both of you? I don't think you should give up your hotel room mm-hmm. income to the restaurant, but you should make sure that potentially you're getting a different percentage because events are more profitable than just typical F&B on that. And obviously they wouldn't be having the event if they didn't have your hotel rooms. But I think under any circumstances, if you put capital into the restaurant, like you're a part of building it out, then you should get your investment back first, plus a return. Let him get his investment back first, plus a return. And you got to track that carefully to make sure there's no funny business. But then once you guys have both gotten your money back, then you should continue to participate in the upside. But since the restaurateur is doing all the work, obviously the lion's share, you know, should go to them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then how would you think about this in the, like, when I think about the structure as it pertains to raising for the hotel versus the restaurant, in this case, I would just be raising for both of them together, but then I would basically be waiting for us to get paid back specifically, and then they would then be
able to get paid. You would, so what you would do is you would raise money for the hotel and the portion of your costs for the restaurant.
Yeah.
And in your cash flows, obviously, after both of you are paid back, you're going to underwrite some income coming from the restaurant, maybe different income coming from groups and events. Like maybe you have like a, it's common to have like a rental fee. So if someone's getting married in your courtyard or on your patio, you know, maybe you rent that and you keep 80% of that and then give 20% to the restaurant, you know, something like that. So there's different things that you can do there. But yeah, you should include like the money you raise for the hotel. Don't separate it. Just include that in your total cost. That's how I would look at it. Because everyone, the investors in the hotel are going to benefit from the restaurant, just like, you know, you're proposing the business plan.
Hey, Jay, good morning. Sorry for not opening my camera, but I'm driving, unfortunately.
Keep it safe.
Yeah. Just a little background. I've been working in hospitality and parking business for over 7 years with over 100 different hotels in 25 different states. Also own a BPO company in Eastern Europe, but in the very near future, thinking on investing in the hotels business because I've seen quite a few of acquisitions, especially in the late this years, like SLS in Miami, which was bought and changed to Dua, and another one Sheraton in Columbus. Anyway, my question is very simple. Do you think it's better on purchasing and buying a current hotel and rebranding it, you know, with your vision, or probably just start something from scratch, from, you know, you throw the first concrete and the shovel? What would you say to that?
This is a great question. I think getting financing, debt and equity for a construction project right now is very, very complicated, very expensive. And you're also going to have to go through a permitting process, get all of your entitlements, and all of that takes time. If you have an existing hotel that you can go in and renovate, you also potentially have the benefit of buying an asset with a proven track record and in-place cash flow. So what I would recommend is to try and keep that hotel opened as long as possible. Maybe you're kind of doing a floor by floor, section by section. And then once you're complete, then you relaunch it. But during that whole period, depending on how extensive the transformation is, you have some cash flow. Now, what I don't like doing is, you know, let's just say like you have like a 2-star motel and it's like kind of a crappy place and you want to turn it into this really cool, hip, funky motel, like the standard in Miami Beach that looks like a motel, but really is not. As you're going through the transformation, you start to open the spaces. You don't want to open spaces and then have them used by like the 2-star hotel guests, because it's going to dilute the impact, the excitement, and potentially crap up some of the stuff that you've just built. It's better to kind of just keep those spaces closed as you finish them, then open all at once. But at least if you have an existing hotel, you're going to have some cash flow while you're going through the planning, while you're going through the repositioning, while you're doing what you need to do. So today, personally, that's our preference. I mean, we would be much more likely to buy an existing hotel that we can renovate and recreate our image. We're looking at a deal right now in kind of the Cape Cod area, and it's an existing hotel, but like to build a hotel in that area, it's just years. And it's just, I don't know, it might not be worth it. It's just a lot of work. Renovating a hotel is always much easier. You know, maybe you need a lot of permits, maybe you don't, but it's just easier.
May I give you an example? For example, Sheraton Columbus downtown was purchased for $10 million, right? And it's a 400 rooms hotel. And the renovation cost will be on the $38 to $42 million in renovating for those 400 rooms. So what the ownership is doing right now is they close 200 rooms, starting renovating and opening, and pretty much just keeping another 200. But at the same time, because of the renovation, they're losing a lot of guests, because you see a lot of trucks over there and you see a lot of people with concrete going on the floors back and forth. And there was a lot of feedback for that. So in my mind, I'm like, is this really worth it? Because by the time that, yes, you are rebranding, but by the time you get everything up and running, you're going to have your feedback. So technically, you're going to have to rebrand again after you rebrand it, only because of the reviews that you already got. Because, you know, Sheraton, you're in the business probably way longer than I have, but Marriott will come to you and say, like, what is going on in here? Like, you're going to lose your license if you keep doing this. So on my mind, it's just like, is this really worth it? Or, you know, just start it from the ground? Because realistically, with $50 million, you technically can build your own hotel in downtown Columbus.
100%. So I can give you my shared real life experience. So we are experts at renovating crappy Sheraton hotels and transforming them into some of the best Sheraton hotels that there are. But Sheraton is a somewhat challenged brand because many of the hotels in the brand are not up to the standard that they should be. They're not up to the standard of my new hotel that we just transformed in Reston. And if you have a Sheraton next to a Westin, it may underperform just for the name brand, despite the fact that you might have much better room product. So this is a hotel that we bought in 2018, and it was 298 rooms. It's now 302 rooms. We added four more rooms, and we did a complete transformation of this hotel. I mean, this was like the ugliest, crappiest Sheraton you could possibly imagine. And now we have one of the best hotels in the brand. I mean, this is the lobby. It's really cool. It's really nice. It's a huge hotel. You know, like, here's the rooms. They're beautiful. I mean, they're nicer than actually a lot of West. I mean, they're nice. We have a Westin right next door. It's nicer than the Westin. But what I will tell you, with old hotels, and I don't know about the Sheraton Columbus downtown, but based on what they paid for it, that hotel is probably old. And an old hotel has old pipes. It might have asbestos. And if you think your renovation cost is going to be $40 million, it could very easily be $50 million. Because once you get into something, you find more stuff. This is broken. You got to redo this. You got to redo that. And it's endless. Similar thing happened here. The market was very strong. We saw an opportunity to knock it out of the park. So we did it. But in this instance, I think we bought the hotel for $25 million or something, and then we spent like $30 million. So similar situation. We ripped out every single window, put in all new windows. We ripped out every single piece of drywall so you could see from one end of the corridor to the other end. I mean, it's cleared out. All new pipes, all new everything. And we didn't anticipate to go that deep when we first bought it. Now, the market was going gangbusters pre-COVID at that time, so the business plan justified it, but it was quite a undertaking. And at the end of the day, we still have a Sheraton, which definitely has brand problems, but we are the number one hotel on TripAdvisor in our market. So we've gotten tremendous reviews. But to your point, we lost so much business during the renovation. We had to like close during COVID for the renovation, all this stuff. It's taken a very long time to come back because this market in Reston, Virginia is still recovering. And the impact was quite significant. We did something similar to what you described in that hotel where, you know, we shut off some of the floors and we kept open some of the floors and some of the wings or whatever. But I think these value add hotels like you're describing, potentially, depending on the market, depending on the location, depending on your basis, could be much more risky than the likely return. And the risk reward probably doesn't justify it. So I can tell you personally, our investment strategy doesn't include any type of these value add hotels anymore. I mean, maybe if we could find something just so cheap, it was so obvious in the best location, we would consider it. But we're really not. And we've renovated like two Sheratons like this. They're both performing really well. But going forward, I don't think it's something that we're going to really spend time doing anymore.
Hi, Jake.
Hey.
I had a question about testing concepts. I know that with restaurants or like with retail, they kind of can have like a sort of pop-up or something that doesn't require a lot of investment to test a concept. And I wanted to know what your thoughts were with hotels, if it's even sort of possible to do something like that, like a pop-up hotel experience or like a temporary activation to test your you know, boutique hotel concept?
My honest answer is no, but I can share two examples. So we were developing a very well-known hotel in the Silicon Valley area. And before building the hotel, we built what's called a model room. And we built it in a warehouse. We built out, like, it literally looks like a real room. We brought in multiple versions of furniture. We could test and sample different things. We had full bathrooms, full room, full corridors, like windows, everything. I mean, the thing cost probably $1 million to do. It was insane. Now, this is like a $300 million or $400 million development or something. So it was well worth it because the mistakes that we would have avoided on a bigger project without doing it would have been way more costly. So that's one way you can kind of test out like design, which I think is valuable, definitely. If you have an existing hotel, it's even easier because you just renovate one of the rooms and test it out. And you can get feedback from guests, maybe that are already staying in the hotel, feedback from friends and family, you know, designers, other people, influencers, and have them check it out before you go and expand it. So if you have an existing hotel, that's really a great way. There was a guy we were talking to about a deal in Texas, and he owned a piece of land and he was wanting to do like an experiential, whatever you want to call it, resort, something on the property. And in order to create buzz, he started having events on the property and he started having activations, and he kind of brought like trailers out and he had like teepees and he did fun stuff and he had it catered and the events were really good. And he created these amazing movies and he created a tremendous amount of buzz. And what I think he did was developed like a clientele of future customers. So that was one way that I thought was really interesting, but it worked in that instance because it was driving distance to a big population. He owned the land. He was creative and he came up with these activities. Like they were around like retreats and stuff. Like there was a solar eclipse. So he had a big solar eclipse party, all that kind of stuff. But other than that, it's very difficult. But what I will say is you have the opportunity to go to all these different hotels and determine for yourself what you think works and what doesn't work, and then take all that inspiration and put them into your property. The other thing you could look to is like neighboring properties, properties near where you are potentially, and see if they're successful, see what's working, what's not working at their hotels, and try and implement it at your hotel. Those are the best ways to do it, I think. And the cheapest way without taking any risk is to go try other people's hotels and determine what you think, what was missing, what was done well, what was not done well. And, you know, the way things look on Instagram aren't always how they appear when you stay in and experience it for yourself. So you have the opportunity to do that. So it's a great way to do it that's relatively inexpensive.
I currently own a hospitality management business and includes a 10-unit resort in Maine. I own all the properties without investors, obviously plenty of bank financing, but it's just me right now. The motel next door, right next to my little resort, wants to sell. But at this point, I'm kind of tapped out from my own personal financing. So I'm just curious, if you were in my shoes, how would you approach that? And then more generally, how would you approach like the next few years, like scaling with investors versus holding out for a couple of years to do something on my own again? I'm kind of at that spot where I have to decide those two things. So just curious what you think.
Great question. Let me ask you a couple questions back. How big is the hotel or the motel next door? And what do you think the price range is?
The motel is 20 units and the price range all in, it probably like a 1 to 1.5 sale, but it needs like 500,000. So call it 1.5 to 2 million is the cost.
Okay. And you have 10 units right next door.
Yeah.
And you're successful.
Yeah. It's and going well.
Do you think there's upside on the 20 units that you're looking to buy, or do you just think that you can continue to do what they're doing?
Definitely upside there. It's like a rundown motel.
Sounds like a great opportunity. So what you have, very few people have, you have a proven track record, and you also happen to have a proven track record right next door to the thing that you want to buy.
Yep.
So that's amazing because most people don't have that. The other thing that that's going to allow you to do is articulate your competitive edge and your competitive advantage, which one of those things is that. The next is proximity. You already have a local infrastructure. You already know the vendors. You already know how to do it. And it's in your backyard. So you are the best to execute. And you can show real data with what you're doing and compare it to what could be done at this other property. So the story's there. You need to figure out what your competitive edge is and be able to articulate it, write it down. It should be like four or five bullets, and they're obvious. Like,
yeah,
it shouldn't be like crazy shit. It should be like, I own the hotel next door. We're successful. We can be successful at this hotel. One, the only thing that I want you to consider and evaluate for yourself, which it's small, you have 10, they have 20, is if there's enough demand for all 30 of your units to be successful. So, you know, a simple way to do that is like, in peak season, in your season, if you're sold out every night, well, then all that overflow business would go there. And you can evaluate that. You can see their numbers and determine what their performance is relative to your performance. You know, you put their website up next to your website and maybe they don't even have a website. So I think you're a perfect candidate to raise capital and you have a great story. If you feel as though you're tapped out personally, or maybe you don't want to expose yourself to that level of risk right now, then you should go out and raise money from friends and family. And I think you should start talking to people that you know that have money now, tell them what you want to do, and just implant that idea in their head. And the great thing is you can invite them, if they haven't been, to see what you've already done. One of the things that I've always found at the early stage is good is if you go seeking money, you will often get advice. If you go seeking advice, you will often get money. So if you start talking to these wealthy people that you know and just start asking what they think, maybe you already have the idea in your head, but not only are you getting some great advice from someone who has capital, but potentially they are telling you the answers to all your future objections from any investor. They're telling you your blind spots. They're telling you what you need to think about. And you can incorporate that into your pitch. The good news is, like, it's not a lot of money that you're raising. No. So if you take $25,000 from people, that's fine. If you take $100,000 from people, that's fine. Don't be ashamed to take that amount of money, but also recognize that it's a big obligation because the people are investing to bet on you, but they're investing to, you know, get a return on the capital. The other good thing is from a lender standpoint, if you want to use financing, you have a bankable track record.
Yep.
And I would go to a local bank and you might even be able to get like SBA money, but
yeah,
then you have to personally guarantee it. You might not want to do that. So yeah, you could probably just get it from any other bank, but it sounds like a tremendous opportunity. My first deal that I did, I raised money from investors and we'd never, like, you know, my dad was in the hotel business, but he never raised money from investors. And I got told no like 1,000 times, but I found a few people to say yes. And then the next time they tell their other friends and they say yes. And then I went from raising like $2 million in the first deal to $20 million in the next deal. And it just snowballs. So you got to start somewhere. And this seems like a real reasonable place to start.
Makes sense. And then I could transition that into whatever's next after that. It's almost like a good sandbox to learn the investor side of things instead of just, it's nice owning it yourself. You don't have to answer anyone else, but eventually I'm tapped out. So if I want to keep.
Yeah, well, make sure, depending on how you have it structured. Now, if you have one guy putting in all the money, you're going to have to answer to him and he might have all the control. But if you have a LP base, they're limited partners. And you know, we treat our investors really well. Our reporting is best in class, but we don't really have to answer them. We answer when they call to ask us questions, but you do not want to be an entrepreneur or a business person and be taking feedback and advice from your investors if that goes against what you want to do as the business leader. They are giving you their capital because you know what to do with it. So, you know, you don't want to invite your investors in to like pick the paint color and pick the wall and tell you what you should do in all these different scenarios. Those are your decisions. That's the responsibility you're taking on.
But I had a question regarding, currently we're looking at one deal and I think Hilton and Marriott seems to be pushing a lot on Spark and the City Express instead of like we're trying to land on Hampton or Fairfield. Like, what do you think about these two new brands? I know the Hampton and Fairfield would cost a lot more to renovate, especially with their requirement for the exterior compared to these two new brands. But I'm just a little hesitant about, I guess they're too new for me. So what do you think about those two brands?
Well, honestly, I don't even know what a Spark is. Like, I heard about it. Is that the one where they're trying to compete with like Motel 6, where they're like open to exterior corridors and, or is that the extended stay brand?
No, I think it's more, they're like competing somewhere between economy and mid-scale, I would say, Spark. Yeah.
I think your instincts are right. What I will say though, is that I know a lot of very experienced and smart Hilton and Marriott franchisors that have bet on early brands and been tremendously successful. Like we did it actually. So we own at the time it was the largest Home 2 in the country in Philadelphia that we built. And at the time we did it, there were like no Home 2s. I mean, there was maybe like two open or something. And the hotel was very successful because we had brand.com, Hilton.com, Marriott.com to give us the pipe. But you want to know what the development pipeline looks like from them. So you want to know how many Sparks are signed up, what the timeline is for opening, also what groups are doing those deals. If they're legit groups, then it's something to consider. If it's just a bunch of like desperate, you know, people that did whatever they could to put Hilton on the side and it seems like they were more pushed into it than, you know, wanting to go into it themselves, I might hesitate. But you also got to evaluate the reality of the situation and that a Hampton or a Fairfield just might not, if it's an exterior corridor motel or hotel, they just might not allow that. So no matter what you do, you might not be able to get it. Now, if you convert the exterior corridor to an interior corridor, then all day long, I would go Fairfield, Hampton. It's just a known commodity. Those are always going to perform better than a newer property. Than a newer like brand for sure. No doubt.
This is interior corridor, like old Ramada, 20 years old, but the box is pretty good. So like if we do convert in Hampton or Fairfield, then obviously the exterior, we might have to kind of match somewhat to the prototype depending on the design, but the
key, yeah.
Like, hey, these brands going to be quicker. And
I would push hard for Hampton or Fairfield. You're going to be able to get better bank debt because they also know there's a better track record. There's better brand recognition from the customer. And the other thing that's also important is there's a big buyer base. So regardless if you want to hold on to it forever, you always want to think about who's going to be your buyer. And there's just always going to be more buyers for a Hampton or a Fairfield than there will be for a Spark. Now, maybe in 10 years that changes, but there's a lot more buyers for those two hotels than a Spark. You could also consider like a True. Maybe that's an option. That's a little bit more established.
I think that's more ground up though.
Yeah.
It's doing pretty well. I think the couple of people I know who's done a few properties are True and it's doing well compared to what the investment is. I guess the rooms are a tad smaller than Hampton or Fairfield. So yeah. But the City Express is new too. I think I haven't seen any. I don't think they've opened any converted in anywhere. So it's just a little reluctant to think about it. But the guys,
I think you're thinking about the right things. Yeah. Now you do get the benefit of the brand, but my general opinion, regardless of if your hotel was brand new renovated and you're competing against a Hampton, Like if you're like a Spark or something competing against a Hampton, Hampton's going to beat you out all day long, even if your hotel is brand new and theirs is 5 years old.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, it's like a classic McDonald's theory, right? Everyone knows what McDonald's is. So,
I think you should push yeah. for it. Now you also have to evaluate your costs. You know, maybe the conversion costs don't pencil, but I think it would be worthwhile spending a lot of time trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I think if we can get it at the price, I'm almost there. If I can get it at the price, which we can, then even doing a Fairfield or Hampton would work out. But let's see. thanks for your input. I appreciate
100%. Good luck, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Good luck.
My question would be, in unsophisticated markets, the market app that I'm building in, no one reports like their data. It's really hard for me to get access. I'm now starting to talk to local brokers just to be able to start painting somewhat of a feasibility study here. I'm looking at like getting traffic from like the closest restaurant I have just to like showcase like visitor demand that's not being satisfied. But I just wanted to know if you had any perspective here on how I can paint a case for like a market that I kind of need to make. The asset that I'm creating here doesn't exist in the market today. And so comp sets are not great here. I'm planning on pulling from other kind of like barefoot luxury hotels in my area that are not in the town that I'm in, but just zooming out, you know, is there any other creative ways that you think I could be approaching this?
I think you're thinking about it the right way. Definitely get actual numbers from other places, even if it's not in your local market. And then, you know, one objection will be why your market is not entirely different. So if those markets have like an airport, direct flights to the US and yours doesn't, then that's what people say. So you want to make sure you articulate what the similarities are in the market. Like, oh, we both have both on the water, or we both are an hour away from the US, like whatever it is, make sure you establish that. And then you just need to talk to everyone. Like you should talk to brokers because they can get information, I think, potentially better than you can because you're like potential competition, whereas they can do it a different way. The other thing that you should, and brokers don't always know how to do this, but you should consider having a broker, if they're sophisticated enough, putting together a feasibility study or a market analysis and let them go get all the information and do all the work and pay for it. But that way, you know, maybe they can go to a group, get actual numbers, but not disclose the specific hotel so that they don't feel like their competition is being violated. But that is how I would approach it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm also
trying
to...
It's not a deal breaker that there's no comp set around you. It's just you have to figure out how to figure out what your comp set is. In a market like Cabo, the comp set is obviously all the 1,000 hotels in Cabo, right? But in reality, if you're focusing on the luxury set in Cabo, maybe it's the 5 hotels in Cabo, but it could be like the 5 hotels in Punta Mita too, because it's kind of the same thing, similar airlift. And I think you can do that with your space. So if you are such a niche concept, then go find the other niche concepts in Mexico and try and get the data on them. And some of them, you know, the cool thing is like, you can go stay in those hotels and you should go stay in those hotels.
Yes.
And, you know, you're kind of a paying guest. So you can go meet with the owner and the owner will want to be hospitable and hopefully share a lot of information with you. And you're not going to be viewed as competition because they're already an established player in a different market and they're going to be fine. So I would try and just do a lot of site visits and property tours and meet with the owner every time you're at one of those places. Don't miss the opportunity not to meet with the GM or the owner or someone to get all the information.
Yeah, makes total sense. I'm also doing a bit of that in this market, helping out people who just are genuinely bad at hospitality marketing and like helping them out. And as a result, they're being super helpful in terms of just like giving me their occupancy data and everything. And so
great.
It did work, but I hadn't thought to think outside of Baja because I know all my competition here and I've stayed at all of them. I'm 2 hours outside of Cabo. And so I have an idea of a lot of the boutique properties here, but I hadn't thought to frankly look at other places in Mexico, which makes a ton of sense because even as a destination, aside from Cancun and Riviera Maya, like this is the biggest fly-in market. And so
yeah.
Other ones even, I think.
Well, there's like, I think Holbox or something I've heard of. Like I haven't been there, but you know, you can look there. That's kind of a different location completely, but you can still get data because there aren't a lot of hotels doing exactly what you do. And people will seek out the hotel more so than like, oh, I want to be in Baja. What's a cool hotel? They're probably seeking out your hotel. So That's why it's reasonable to go to other places where people seek out the hotel and less the destination. People are going to Cancun. They don't give a shit where they stay. They just want to be in Cancun. Yes. It's a different vibe than what you're creating.
Definitely.
So keep it up. There's a, this website, I don't know if you've ever been here, if anyone's ever been here, it's called A Hotel Life. It was started by this guy, Ben Pundle, who kind of worked in like the boutique hotel space. And what's cool is he has really great boutique hotel reviews that he has like random people that are in his world go and review all these hotels. But if you go to North America, they have a ton in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and these are not like Hilton Marriott hotels. These are all really cool. So yes. I don't know. You probably know more of these places, but like, look at all these like different hotels they have in different areas, and you should visit all these hotels and go get the information on all these hotels.
Yeah. It's a great call. Appreciate it.
Good luck. Have fun.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone. Hey everyone. It's Jake here. Thanks again for joining me on this conversation. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Lastly, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Jay Wurzak. I'll see you in the next episode.
Jake Wurzak is the founder and CEO of Dove Hill Capital Management. All opinions expressed by Jake and his guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Dove Hill Capital Management. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not reflect or represent real estate, financial, or investment advice.